On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
It's not often that you open up a news app and you read a headline like this. Britain's health secretary saying that a new variant of coronavirus is out of control and that he's really worried about how the country's health service will cope. Matt Hancock saying the UK faces an enormous challenge controlling a new strain after scientists found that it was able to spread more quickly. It's out of control and we need to bring it under control, he told the Andrew Marr this morning. I'm really worried about the NHS. There are currently just over 18,000 people in NHS hospitals with coronavirus. That is only just below the number that were there at the first peak, and it's another reason why everybody needs to follow the new rules and take that personal responsibility. This, of course, is after a brand new level of restrictions was introduced for London and the southeast of England inside the last 24 hours, a tier 4, level 4 in a 3-tier system. But is there any danger of this new strain of coronavirus entering Ireland, and just how much do we know about it? Well, delighted to say we're joined on the line by the director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory, Dr. Cillian de Goscuin, who's also a member of NEFIT. Cillian, thanks very much for joining us this lunchtime. How much do we know about this new variant, and how much can we say for certain that it spreads quicker than the strains we've known so far?
Yeah, good afternoon, Gavin. We're still learning about the new variant. I think there's a couple of interesting things about it. So it has a number of mutations that have been alluded to, and what we know from these mutations to date, based on lab studies that have been performed, is that they're in or around the part of the virus, which is the spike protein, that the virus uses to get into human cells. And we know that some of these mutations have an impact on how well the virus binds to the cell. So it increases its infectivity, in essence. And then there are other mutations that are near the area of the virus that would be expected to elicit an immune response. So the question that arises then is whether the immune response that's elicited to, say, the normal or sort of non-variant wild-type virus, whether those antibodies and whether that immune response would be effective against this new variant. The information on how transmissible it is seems to be, at this point, based in the UK, at least, seems to be based just on the rate of spread over the last 4 weeks. The variant was first identified back in September, around the 20th or 21st of September.
Okay.
But it's really only in the past 4 weeks that it seems to have kicked off. And it has been identified in a couple of other countries as well, but hasn't kicked off to the same degree in those countries. So we still need, I suppose, more information to figure out exactly how transmissible it is. Certainly, the fact that it's become the predominant strain in certain parts of the UK over the last 4 weeks would raise the question that it may be more transmissible. Thankfully, at this point in time, there doesn't seem to be any association with an increased severity of illness. And equally, we don't have any definitive evidence at this point in time that it is less likely to be handled by the immune response than, say, the wild-type virus.
Okay. I think. So does that mean then, sorry to interrupt you, Cillian, does that mean that it is too early to say with absolute certainty and that we're only working off anecdotes when we hear that this virus does spread more quickly than the traditional strain?
I don't want to say it's based on anecdotes, because my understanding is that the UK has been doing some work on this over the last, say, few days, last week or so. But I don't think the scientific evidence has been put out into the public domain yet. But what we do have are data from scientists who have worked on these mutations separately over the course of the last number of months on different virus variants, if you like. So coronaviruses will mutate all the time. And I think what's also interesting about this virus is that it does appear to have more mutations at this point in time than we would expect. So typically, SARS coronavirus type 2 accumulates mutations at around about the rate of 1 to 2 per month. But what we've seen with this virus is that, or this variant, is that it has more mutations than we would expect, given the fact that the pandemic is only 12 months old. So what that raises the question is how this virus may have originated. So that's important for us to figure out as well. It might have originated in a setting of somebody perhaps who was chronically infected. So the virus had an opportunity to be exposed to an immune system over a prolonged period of time and evolve in that setting. Or equally, people might remember the story about the Danish mink variant from a couple of months back. that also had more mutations than we would expect, and the virus seemed to evolve in mink at a faster rate than it did in humans. Now, there's no suggestion at this point in time that this variant has any association with animals, but we are puzzled as to how it has acquired so many mutations in comparison to other virus lineages that are currently circulating.
Okay. I know the public health advice has been to discourage people who are abroad from coming home for Christmas, but nonetheless, there does seem to be quite a number of flights from London, an area which is now in its own lockdown, still coming to Ireland today. And we don't know how many passengers are on those, but would you have concern that, given the apparent prevalence that this new strain has in London and the southeast of England, how high would you put the risk of that strain being carried back to Ireland as we're in the middle of what would usually be the peak travel season?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we have seen over the last number of months that this virus obviously likes to travel. People might remember again the Spanish variant from the summer that spread throughout Europe. Yes. And became one of the predominant strains. I think it's likely if people are traveling from the UK that the virus will move around Europe and probably to Ireland as well. I think the key thing for us will be to work with our public health colleagues to identify cases in people who have returned from the UK. And I think it's important if people are have traveled from the UK, I think it's important that they feel safe and secure in coming forward for testing if they develop symptoms. There's a no blame culture applied, because we do carry out sequencing on a weekly basis on a selection of specimens that we test in the National Virus Reference Laboratory, and we haven't seen any trace of this new variant to date. But you're right, certainly over the coming weeks we'll have to increase our vigilance in that respect, because the virus does like to travel, and if it is more transmissible, then it probably is only a matter of time before we'll see it here. But I think we saw how quickly the Danish authorities responded back in September, October time with the mink variant. And I think, to be fair, the UK has responded quite quickly in introducing new measures in London and the southeast as well, because the new variant isn't spread throughout the throughout England or throughout the UK, so we can control the emergence of these new variants with the public health measures that we have in place. But obviously we want people to avoid unnecessary travel to reduce the risk of importing the virus.
Yeah, I suppose one of the big concerns would be, Killian, that if this new strain is more virulent or is more easily transmissible than the main one that's out there, that it means that in order to keep virus levels under control prior to critical mass of vaccine, that public health restrictions have to be that little bit more acute. So say, for example, I think I saw one of the figures yesterday, or a figure that was given in the last couple of days, that this new strain would have an R number which is 0.4 higher than the traditional one. So if you are more likely to pass the traditional strain to 2.6 other people, now you'll pass it to 3. The exponential effect over time of that is pretty significant. So would that mean that if this new strain were to gain a foothold in Ireland, that public health measures have to be that much more acute in order to have any real benefit?
Yeah, I've seen those numbers speculated as well. And I think it's important to figure out at this stage why or how the virus is more transmissible, or how the novel variant might be more transmissible. Is it simply a function of the amount of virus that it produces? Is it more fit at replicating, or is it better at infect getting into human cells? Ultimately, from a control perspective, people, I suppose, need to follow the same old message that we have been speaking about over the last year. The virus travels in people. The virus doesn't have a great sort of, I suppose, it's not traveling around by itself. It's traveling in people and being passed from person to person. So the public health measures that people can follow around good hand hygiene, physical distancing, mask wearing, good respiratory etiquette, all of those things will be capable of controlling this variant as well. At this point in time, there's no reason to suspect that they won't. But you're right, it obviously takes it's more difficult to bring an R naught from 3 down to below 1 than it is to bring an R naught from 1.2 or 1.4 down to below 1. But ultimately, the measures will be the same. As you say, the duration of what's required might need to be longer to achieve the desired effect. But the same public health measures will be effective against this virus. But it is important that we keep an eye out for it and that we're vigilant in the context of identifying it quickly.
Yeah, I suppose, sorry to interrupt you, Killian, again, but I suppose that the question is whether we do think that the existing measures will actually be effective, because, you know, you're a member of NPHET and I know you're not at liberty to discuss the advice that you've sent to government, but it's pretty obvious that the numbers in daily cases have risen far higher than NPHET would have anticipated, and that's throughout a period where, for example, there was no household visits. So if people were only able to commune, officially speaking, in, you know, supervised hospitality areas where all the usual protocols were being observed and numbers were still getting high, then it does paint a picture that if this new strain were to gain a foothold, that the restrictions would have to be pretty draconian.
Yeah, it's certainly possible that, but I think it's important that we learn more about the new variant first. You're right, the numbers over the last week or so have increased at a faster rate. But I think it's, again, if we think back to where we were during the summer after the first phase of enhanced restrictions, we were starting from a very low base. We had very low numbers of cases. So if you're starting from a higher baseline, if you're starting from a baseline of hundreds of cases per day, then the virus will, it's still a very transmissible virus, even the original variant. So given an opportunity with increased social contacts, increased interactions between people, it will kick off. And we have seen that over the last couple of weeks from the data. We've seen an increased number of referrals from the community, increased ILI rates, increased, and we have seen increased number of contacts. So people are increasing their social interactions, which is fair enough. That was what was intended as we opened up or as we eased restrictions. Mm. But it is really important for people now to remember that every contact counts. We have seen an increase in the number of contacts that people have had, and ultimately the virus enjoys physical contact. That's what it needs to spread. And as I said, when you're starting from a very high base, and that's what's happening in the UK as well in the southeast, the novel variant obviously is playing a role, but they're also starting from a base where they've very significant numbers and very significant number of cases and deaths on a daily basis.
I wanted to ask you about the logistics of vaccine rollout and what sort of level we'd need for critical mass, but actually a texter has come in with a question which maybe you might be able to answer. This is from Colette, who says, if after getting the vaccine, we don't know at what point this person is in the queue for the vaccine, but if after getting the vaccine you are at some stage deemed to be a close contact of a COVID case, would you still have to self-isolate for 14 days afterwards?
Yeah, that's, it's a really good question, and I think there's a little bit we don't yet know about the vaccine in the context of what exactly it can achieve. So we know from the clinical trials that it reduces your risk of disease, of severe, of infection. We don't yet know whether it has an impact on you getting the infection and not developing symptoms, and whether it has an impact on whether you can are capable of transmitting the virus to somebody else.
Now, it is so it might stop you getting sick, but it doesn't stop you passing it on, or at least we don't know whether it'll stop
exactly.
you passing it on.
Now, it is likely, just if we go back to basic principles, if your immune system has been primed with the vaccine, it is likely that even if you were to get an infection, the duration of that infection would be shorter, the development of symptoms would be shorter, and it's possible that the amount of virus your body has the opportunity to produce would be lower. So therefore, there's no reason to believe at this point in time that the vaccine won't have an effect on whether you can transmit onwards, but certainly we don't have definitive data to date. I think the AstraZeneca Oxford group has some preliminary data suggesting that their vaccine has an impact on the prevalence or the rate of asymptomatic infection. But back to the question from the listener, I suppose the difficulty is we need to see what the effectiveness rate and response rate for the vaccine will be in the general population, because in the clinical trials it was obviously very high, but if, say, for example, in the real world the effectiveness drops from, say, 95% down to maybe 80%, which would still be very good, but it said we don't know if you've been vaccinated, we don't know if you're one of the 80% or one of the 20%. So I think in the short term, if you're a close contact, yes, I think the public health measures as we currently have them would apply. But obviously, as we learn more about the vaccines, then that guidance may evolve over time.
Okay, we'll see how that all goes. I'm afraid we're out of time, Killian. Thank you very much for your advice on this this week, but also for speaking to us so regularly over the year. I know it's been a year that's been busier than I think any of us would have anticipated. But we very much appreciate some of your expertise and guidance throughout the year. Killian de Goscoon, who's the Director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory at UCD and a member of NPHET.